My address today is looking at the concept of pilgrimages. It looks at examples from different belief systems and contemplates why people were and are inspired to undertake them. And finally, it asks if there is still a role for pilgrimages in my life and hopefully your lives as well. The service was prompted by the book A Travel Guide to the Middle Ages by Anthony Bale. It's a book that explores the whys and wheres of travel in the Middle Ages, focusing on those who choose to engage in pilgrimages. Now, pilgrimages in the Middle Ages were not for the faint-hearted and carried a serious risk to life and limb. There was a reasonable expectation that you would not return from whatever land you were setting off for. These pilgrimages were carried out for many reasons, including to fulfill a ritual obligation or to perform an act of devotion or to atone for one's sins or even to ask for a particular favor. Of particular interest to medieval travelers was obtaining indulgences or pardons. And these were ways of reducing your amount of time in purgatory. These indulgences were usually associated with travel to a saint's shrine, and the pilgrims would pay that particular church or its brokers for certificates of indulgences. So I'm going to give you an example of some of the indulgences that you could obtain in the 13 or 1400s should you have traveled to Rome. So should you have traveled to Rome and landed up in St. Peter's in the Vatican, you got 28 years at each of the 28 altars on the relevant saint's day, plus 7 years at the 7 most important altars. You got 1,000 years of remission of purgatory on the Feast of the Annunciation, 1,000 years on Maundy Thursday, 1,000 years on St. Peter's Feast Day, 7,000 years and remission from a third of all sins on the anniversary of the church's dedication. When the vernacle, which is the cloth of St. Veronica, is shown, you got 3,000 years if you were a Roman, 9,000 years if you had traveled from between the Alps and Rome, and 12,000 years for those who had come from beyond the Alps. If you went to St. John Lateran's Church, you got full remission of sins for all those who entered the chapel of St. John the Baptist, men only. Women could get the indulgences if they touched the door. In St. Lawrence's Outside the Walls, you got 7 years of pardon, 7 Lents, and remission of a third of all sins, 100 years on the feast days of St. Lawrence and St. Stephen, and anyone who visited the church on a Wednesday could deliver a soul from purgatory. With our 21st century sensibilities, it's easy to scoff at this and even to fail to understand what might have prompted people to give up everything and take off for sometimes years at a time to go to far off places, often with little chance of returning. But are we doing those who engaged in these pilgrimages and even ourselves a disservice by not taking some time to explore why people chose and still choose to go on pilgrimages? I suppose, like many of you who grew up in Ireland, the first thing that comes to mind when I think of pilgrimages is particularly Catholic-centric. Places like Lourdes, Knock, and Loch Derg spring to mind, alongside traditional pilgrimage routes like the Camino de Compostela and the Reek Sunday to climb Crowpatrick. I think the idea of pilgrimages was something that was just something I grew up with. When I was little, everybody I knew had bottles of holy water from Knock or Lourdes. And as I got older and my world became a little wider, I met people from other countries and discovered that pilgrimages are a part of many cultures and religious traditions. And I learned about pilgrimages like the Umrah to Mecca and the Hindu festival of Kumbh Mela. Accustomed to stories of Knock and Lourdes and even Medjugorje, pilgrimages to Mecca or holy cities in Uttar Pradesh seemed utterly romantic, as did the more secular ones that I'd heard about, like the Burning Man Festival and Glastonbury. But we weren't an overtly religious family, so trips to Lourdes and Knock were not for me. And although I did manage the odd trip to Tip, Glastonbury and the Burning Man Festival were beyond my reach, and if I was being entirely honest, probably beyond my understanding. Living in a field for a week with questionable hygiene standards and awful foods was just not my thing. Anyway, back to medieval pilgrimages. Reading the book, this one here, The Traveller's Guide to Middle Ages, really gave me pause. Why would people, rich and poor alike, decide to leave everything behind and head off on these pilgrimages? Remember, this was when it wasn't an easy thing to consider doing. There was no cheap Ryanair flights, no nice package trips that could drop you into Rome or Jerusalem for a quick trip to the Basilica, you know, to visit the relevant relics, and then a quick trip to duty-free on the way home. These trips could take several years. They were to far-flung lands filled with strange people who spoke different languages, ate different foods, and had entirely different customs. The trip across Europe would have involved navigating hundreds of fiefdoms, baronies, principalities, and kingdoms where there were taxes and tolls and bribes to be paid. There were no handy reviews on TripAdvisor, no Google Maps, no Revolut app to pay for food and lodgings. So what made people do this? I had a look at the Bible to see if I could find any explanations. And indeed, there are many, many examples in both the Old and New Testament that talk of journeys undertaken that I suppose we could consider pilgrimages. In Genesis, Abraham leaves his home to go in search of God, to go in search of a land which God promises to show him, becoming a pilgrim or a sojourner, whose willingness to obey God makes him a model of faith and obedience. The story of Moses leading his people on the exodus from Egypt is one that plays a key role in Christian thought. And the long journey through the wilderness towards the promised land has been interpreted as a paradigm of the Christian journey through a fallen world towards heaven. In the New Testament, Christians are encouraged to see themselves as pilgrims and strangers on the earth, as temporary residents whose true home is in heaven. Both John and Mark describe Christian life as a journey towards that homeland in which the individual believer seeks to follow and obey Christ through an alien, frequently hostile world. So being a Unitarian, I looked at other faith systems and belief systems too, and I found that in Hinduism, the pilgrimage is viewed as a liminal process that establishes participation in the spiritual realm. It is also undertaken as a social duty, a rite of passage, and a mode of supplication. Pilgrims are expected to engage with the sacred landscapes they encounter on the way. And these landscapes are partly defined by sacred symbols, cosmographic and astrological alignments, traditions, festivals, and the belief that these places themselves are spiritual crossing places into the transcendent realms of the divine. Hindu holy sites can be classified into three particular groups. Water sites, usually associated with sacred immersion on auspicious occasions. Shrines dedicated to particular deities, which are visited by pilgrims of particular sects or with particular needs. And Kshetra, sacred lands usually defined by a cosmic mandala, traveling along which brings special merit. I'm sure many of you can see resonances and similarities between these concepts and some of our traditional places of pilgrimage too. Places where we had festivals like Imbolag and Samhain, which aligned with particular astrological events. Places like Newgrange and Knowth and Knock Row, where we have evidence of the importance to the people of the time of gathering together at the winter solstice. And we know that through the millennia, particular springs and wells were viewed as sacred held spaces where cures could be had. These places have had a special resonance for our people. And as our beliefs changed, so too did the way we viewed these sites. And instead of being associated with more ancient forms of spirituality, they were just adapted and adopted into current belief structures. But their importance remained deep in our tacit knowledge. In Judaism, pilgrimages are defined as a journey made to a shrine or sacred place in performance of a vow or for the sake of obtaining some form of divine blessing. Every male Israelite was required to visit the temple in Jerusalem 3 times a year at Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuot. The Hajj is an annual pilgrimage to Mecca and is one of the 5 pillars of Islam. It's a mandatory religious duty for capable Muslims that must be carried out at least once in their lifetime by all adult Muslims who are physically and financially capable of undertaking the journey, providing that they can support their family during their absence from home. So I think we can see that many faiths and traditions share the idea of sacred sites that believers want to journey to. And I think these pilgrims can be viewed as pilgrimages can be viewed as an allegory of human life on earth. I think it can be viewed, a pilgrimage can be viewed as the exteriorization of an inner journey towards truth, or maybe just an adventure in spiritual discovery. All pilgrimages can have both a physical and metaphorical component to them. And indeed, the concept of the importance of the metaphorical aspects of pilgrimages was one that has found expression through art and poetry and song over the millennia. When researching for this address, I came across this tiny anonymous poem ascribed to the Irish tradition that speaks to this aspect, and I really like it. Who to Rome goes, much labor, little profit knows. For God, on earth though long you sought him, you'll miss in Rome unless you brought him. For those who could not or would not make arduous physical pilgrimages, there were other options too. If you were very rich, you could pay someone else to do it for you. Plus a changer. But the other option was the labyrinth. And the history of the labyrinth is fascinating. It dates back thousands of years. There is evidence on drawings in Russia of it dating back to early Bronze Age. Prehistoric labyrinths, people suggest, may have served as traps for malevolent spirits or as paths for ritual dances, but we really don't know. It has been suggested, though, in medieval times, and we do have some record for this, that when people were unable to undertake a physical pilgrimage, they could walk the labyrinth as their sacred path, and many chose to do so. We have examples of labyrinths all around Europe. Pilgrims and monks have been depicted in art to walk labyrinths on their knees to humble themselves before the divine. The labyrinth can be viewed as a sacred ancient path and has been a spiritual resource used by pilgrims for centuries. Indeed, there are many examples in the Christian tradition of repetitive enclosed paths at sacred sites, which may even have pre-Christian origins. So, having explored some of the historical aspects of pilgrimages, I then turned to thinking about what the idea might mean to me, or if the concept had any relevance in the way I choose to live. And unsurprisingly, I found it did. If you remember when I was introducing the reading I had earlier on, I spoke about the affinity I've always had with St. Kevin, from happy picnics in Glendalough as a child to carrying out archaeological excavations there. I love this symmetry. It rests well with my personal worldview. I think there are resonances from across time and space that speak to you if you listen carefully enough. And like the words of Tennyson in Splendor's Falls, "O hark, O hear, how thin and clear, and thinner, clearer, farther growing. O sweet and far from cliff and scar, the horns of Elfland faintly blowing. Blow, let us hear the purple glens replying. Blow, bugles, answer echoes, dying, dying, dying. O love, they die in yon rich sky. They faint on hill or field or river. Our echoes roll from soul to soul and grow forever and forever. Blow, bugle, blow, and set the wild echoes flying. Answer, echoes, answer, dying, dying, dying. I try to listen out for those echoes, and I'm not sure if they are ancient wisdom or aspects of a supernatural power, but when I get a sense of them, I embrace them. And for me, these fleeting echoes can sometimes be a place or a particular time of the year, like the solstice. But when they happen, for the tiniest of seconds, I get a sense of the vastness of this world and the smallness of my life. But in that smallness, there is a connection to every other being, and that is as it should be. So my pilgrimages are and will continue to be both physical and metaphorical. We only have this one tiny life to lead, and journeying to find that glimpse of that connection will keep pushing me onward. So to finish, I'd like to read you the last few paragraphs of the book that describe the final days of Oderic of Pordenone, an Italian Franciscan friar and missionary explorer who traveled through India, Sumatra, Java, and China, and who died in 1331 after returning from 10 years of traveling. Oderic's story bears out the idea that at the end of our exploring, we arrive where we started, but we understand that starting point anew. On returning from their journey, the traveller is somehow changed, wise in new ways, having encountered radical differences and wonderful similarities, their home life and prior knowledge thrown into a new relief. Travel forces us to consider the significance of our lives and to encounter the littleness of the human amid the planet's variety and unknowability. As he struggled homewards, the dying Oderic may well have felt that the earth he had traversed had itself become tiny, nothing more than a series of points on a small surface, and that the time had come to turn from earthly things to the celestial. This was not to cease roaming, but to search instead for yet other worlds. As the sun set and the blue deepened into night, Oderic received his passport into the skies to join those released from their bodies and from earthly travels into the brilliant circles amid the blazing stars where the soul would begin its mysterious, incorporeal journey towards the horizon of infinity. I hope with this address I've given you something to think about. Hopefully it may have inspired you to think of pilgrimages, physical or metaphorical, that will help you on your paths. Namaste.